I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today is Thursday, March 19th, and we are right in the middle of the global pandemic known as coronavirus. Joining me today to talk about the likely coming cultural shifts due to the virus known as COVID-19 is the brilliant Linda Ong. She is Chief Culture Officer of Civic Entertainment. Hello, Linda. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Paige. Hope you're self-isolating.
I am self-isolating. So it's always a joy to have you. I'm excited to hear you guide everyone through what the shifts might be brought on by social distancing and sheltering at home, et cetera, what all those things might mean for the culture going forward. You're probably the most organized thinker I know, so I'm just going to let you take it away with number one.
Okay, great. Well, I have five ways, and I have a list, long list that I'm adding to every day, so I'm sure I'll have more to talk about soon. But sort of my early reads, and this also was informed by my team, I think one of the most immediate effects that we're probably all seeing is what I call the accelerant effect. So it's sort of like, you know, if you think about arsonists use gasoline as an accelerant, this is sort of like culture using COVID-19 to fast forward trajectories of things that were already happening. For example, everybody now is really forced to work at home, but a lot of people were experimenting or already telecommuting. But things like working from home are now becoming very, very dominant, no longer sort of the fringe outlier. Things that also were in decline. So brick and mortar and shopping malls, which were already facing a tough go of things, including movie theaters, anything that was already struggling is now, obviously, with the social distancing, really going to be impacted. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean that those businesses will close, although we will probably see that. But you will see people either being really innovative and inventive, or even new companies coming in and taking over those spaces and reimagining them. Other technologies that I'm sure everyone listening to this knows are going to be really quickly adopted, if they weren't already, streaming, of course, podcasting, live streaming, also look for that to really increase, because now we have no sports and we have no live entertainment that's being produced that's new, can't go to theater, can't go to the concerts. So those kinds of things, already you're seeing people find new ways to reconstitute those in live streaming technologies. So we're seeing conferences getting reformed very quickly. So a lot of this stuff, again, is just the digital experiences that we're starting to infiltrate our lives are really going to go full force and feel very dominant right now.
The kind of crazy thing I think about that, two areas that I think of. One, my own life, and I'm sure your life too, there's been a lot of streaming, et cetera. But what I've noticed is that, you know, there was just a story today that the European Union asked Netflix to throttle back their streaming by 25% because the European networks, the internet, wasn't able to handle all the traffic. And then even here, just on the various streaming things I participated in, and even like on conference calls, I find that things are struggling. So I feel like infrastructure-wise, we're not totally, I mean, it's pretty robust, but when everybody goes online all the time, we're not fully there.
For sure. And that'll be good for 5G, right? So when 5G arrives, I think it's been interesting because we've seen a lot of advertising for 5G and a lot of people are like, what is it? Why do I need it? This may actually be like the difference maker between, you know, like when we went from dial-up to broadband. So, and, you know, don't forget, aside from just work technologies and entertainment technologies, telemedicine, telehealth, education tech, all those things are going through the roof now too. So everyone's going to be super dependent on internet bandwidth. And I had the same thing. I had some calls that were pretty hinky. So it's going to put pressure again. Like 5G was already coming. It's going to be now more anticipated.
And I wonder if it'll also just cause broadband companies to lay more pipe, because
they're gonna have
whole economy is going online. The other piece of it,
I mean, imagine if we didn't have internet right now.
Oh my God.
You know, one of my colleagues lost her internet and it's like she's not even on the planet, you know.
Yeah, that would be a whole different scenario, because I feel like, you know, you and me, I'm already very used to working remotely, but if you didn't have internet, then that's a whole different thing.
Right.
Well, the other thing I was going to say, just quickly about TV production, I'm going to switch the gear for a second, is TV production, what I think is interesting is you're seeing, like, you know, Savannah Guthrie going live from her home studio, or you've seen that a lot across the board. And I mean, that's something that I think, except for this, no professional broadcast would have tolerated. But now it's bringing in that model. And what does that mean for broadcast networks and broadcasting, that if they're saying you can do it from home, you can do it from your home studio, we have to try different things, you know, that could mean a lot of things for the cost models of those companies.
100%. And I think what's interesting, and that leads into my second point, which is, you know, we can anticipate that a new normal, and I know that's a phrase that gets used a lot, but really this is a paradigm shift, and things that are taking place now, some of them will become new standards for entertainment, for behavior, for what's accepted. And, you know, you take the late night shows, for example, Stephen Colbert was hosting from his bathtub. Jimmy Fallon was hosting from his living room. That kind of freedom and permission without the constraints of, you know, quote unquote, production value will, I think, really fundamentally change a lot of, certainly the way daily talk shows, the morning shows included, Al Roker gave the weather from his kitchen, apparently. That all is going to become normalized over they're anticipating 3 to 4 months that we're going to be in this kind of situation. And then when we come out the other end, it's not like people, you know, rewind and go back to where they were. We will evolve and incorporate these things. And I think going forward, one of the things that I'm really looking at is how do our senses of aesthetics change when it comes to television. You got literally reporters reporting from, you know, their living rooms with their kids running through the background and dogs barking, and some people are wearing suits, but some people are not, and they're don't have the lighting, they don't have the makeup, and we're really seeing people as they really are. Same thing for video conferencing. You know, a lot of people aren't. Before, when I did a video conference, I would be fully dressed in full makeup, and now it just seems like trying too hard to do that. So we're gonna get used to this, right? We're gonna get used to remote working. We're gonna get used to sort of this flexibility, fewer in-person meetings. I mean, right now it's sort of at a fever pitch, but things that we get used to and sort of normalize are gonna be the way we work going forward and the way we live. And I like to say, you know, even the food hoarding that we have to do now, stocking up the pantries, keeping your hands clean, all these hygiene rituals that we're going through, it's not like people are going to stop doing them. Maybe they may stop doing them as much, or they may not be front of mind, but a lot of these things are going to get legacied. And, you know, even like elbow bumping as opposed to hugs and kisses, I think for the next year, people are going to be very concerned, and also more concerned about their health than they ever have been. Mm-hmm. So all these new habits, I think, are going to die really hard in this new era.
I just want to say that people, you don't need to be food hoarding. Stop doing that. And enough for the paper for everybody.
But I think people are, you know, especially people who live in, you know, dense urban areas like New York that only got toilet paper when they needed and stuff like that because they could run around the quarter. I think that's going to change some habits.
Well, New York is special because you have no place to put the stored toilet paper. But even where I live, which is pretty wide open space and people have bigger houses and far suburbia. And even here, there was a huge run on toilet paper. And it was like, guys, like, there's plenty of toilet paper. Stop. The other thing I was going to say that I think is interesting, I'm sure you've seen this too, is, you know, reports that in the Wuhan province, the air pollution practically disappeared, that the canals of Venice were suddenly clean. I'm sure in LA, you're seeing the 405 is not jammed bumper to bumper all day long. And I feel like those things are actually huge benefits and gives, you know, starts to turn us in the direction that's been so prevalent in the news, which is, how are we going to combat climate change? So in that sense, this hard stop is, we need it. It was necessary.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good way to talk about both the two things I was talking about. So the accelerant of COVID on climate awareness and people, their footprints being drastically reduced and entire countries' footprints of carbon emissions being drastically reduced will have some effect on people not necessarily wanting to go back to the levels that they were at before. And again, that whether or not we need to because of industry, et cetera, is not really the point. The point is how much will culture tolerate, right? And if we're able to suppress the levels to such an extent when we're in a lockdown, you know, it's not like a free for all in terms of carbon emissions when we come out of it. So again, the new normal, new expectations will be set for how comfortable people are with the carbon emissions.
I also think for a lot of companies, it will, again, all of a sudden in a day, they had to become comfortable with their whole staff working from home and remotely. And they couldn't be CEOs and managers couldn't be overseeing their teams, which I think a lot of people are still, that's how they want to work. That's how they feel comfortable.
They're still trying. I hear they're still trying.
Oh gosh. But you know, in a day you have to figure out how that you have to trust that your team will work.
Well, I think I talked to somebody about this and someone said, you know, what are the success metrics and how are you going to keep track of people working from home? And I said, well, it's the same as what the success metrics and the work expectations were in the office. I think the only thing that I would say is that we need to give a pass to parents who are having to deal with their kids at home because A, even if they're on spring break, that's very demanding, but especially even if they're doing online studies, it's not necessarily something that doesn't need a lot of parental supervision. So I just think then work hours may change to allow parents to get their kids settled a little bit before launching full in, because it's from what I hear, just the pace is not sustainable for parents right now.
I don't know. I mean, not to bust your personal life to our listeners, but neither you nor I have children at home, right? You
no.
don't. So
I have a barking dog.
I also have a barking dog, but you know, so I don't think I could do my job if I had to be homeschooling my children.
Even if
I was like setting them up in front of a computer, you know for a fact that every 15 minutes they're coming up and needing something.
Well, exactly. So I think that's something culture needs to work out, and I think people are finding out that out the hard way this week. But to that end, if I can go on to number three,
let me just make my one comment, my husband, who I often mention on this podcast. So I don't have children at home, but I do currently have my husband.
Yeah.
And so
I wasn't going to say anything, but I have that issue too.
He's getting better. Like today he was like in his office the whole day, but the first couple of days it was like, okay, hi, what's for breakfast? Okay, now what's for lunch? And I was like, what's happening here? Like,
well,
there's a refrigerator.
You know,
good luck to you.
Well, not to be, you know, pessimistic, but one of the other outcomes coming out of Wuhan was the rate of divorce. Like the day that the quarantine was over, like 80 couples went and got divorced. So there's that too. So
I'm just supposed to have babies. I thought that's what we were doing.
Well, there's going to be babies and there's going to be divorces, but all of that if I can segue to number three, a good segue to what we call the new homesteading. Again, this was something we already saw was happening thanks to Netflix and things like food delivery, Postmates, Grubhub, Blue Apron, even meal kits, the level of professional grade in-home services that are available in terms of beauty with Glam Squad, and you know the number of things that you could have delivered to your home from Amazon and every other e-commerce site, you know, really already was kind of pushing people towards staying at home. And so what we really see happening as a result of that, now that people are really intensively being at home in quarantine for a couple of months, it's almost like the 2020 version of cocooning. If you remember the trend reporter Faith Popcorn coined that term in the early 80s. But what that is about like really sort of creating a sanctuary in your own home to protect you from the stresses of the modern day world. It was interesting because the first time this kind of came around, there was also a fitness boom. And so people with the means to renovate or build new homes were adding home gyms. And that was like a really exotic kind of luxurious addition to your house. So now that's for a lot of people having some kind of home gym, whether it's in their garage or their basement, you know, is normalized. Now what we can see is maybe because, and by the way, when the quarantine happened, the sales of home gym equipment spiked, understandably, because people were worried about gaining weight. But also you're seeing new tech like Peloton and Mirror and other online fitness tech you know, that don't take as much room moving into the house, and perhaps creating more room for newer renovations like screening rooms, now that there's so much TV and great content to watch, really upgrading the television entertainment environment, as well as Sonos making really high grade audio super easy from your phone. Can also see, perhaps because of those in-home beauty services, women and men upgrading their bathrooms to be more salon grade and to allow spaces for outside stylists to come in, as well as wine caves and really expanding the home experience. So thank you to Pete Buttigieg for the wine cave.
But I'm really here for all of this.
But, you know, the idea of like, well, your house doesn't just have to be the place you live. It can be the place you entertain, the place you enjoy new experiences, where we're also anticipating a lot of how-to videos being downloaded and watched, whether it's cooking or a new hobby. People are just trying to find ways to, you know, occupy their time productively. And there's so many available ways to find all this information out. So that's also good for like home design, and channels like HGTV and Food Network are doing better also. So it's about really appreciating home.
If people, you know, do the cocooning thing or whatever we're going to call it in 2020, what would you say would be the trend toward dealing with, on the flip side, socializing and mental health?
Well, mental health, again, another area that was really on a very steep trajectory of, you know, more and more people being interested in dealing with their depression or anxiety. I've heard already anecdotally a lot of people and their children are having sleep disorders because of this quarantine and the disruption to the daily lives. So that's where the telemedicine comes in, is that there are a lot of really great resources that are being discovered, and even doctors that are holding conference calls to update patients on what's going on in the world. So I think that, you know, the good news for both medicine and mental health is that hopefully more accessible ways of getting professional help will be socially acceptable and normalized and affordable.
Yeah, because definitely doing, like, I'm sure this exists now, but doing like having therapy sessions, but doing it online with your counselor as opposed to having to go into the office, you know, that all makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. I just worry, though, if everybody's like sort of self-isolating and then they're like, oh, this seemed to work pretty well, I'm going to keep self-isolating, then we'd also see a concurrent spike in depression. Because I think that even, you know, the most introverted among us needs social contact.
Yeah. Well, we already had a loneliness epidemic in the works, right? Mm-hmm. So again, this might just exacerbate that, but hopefully it will also push forward some new solutions. You know, one of the other points that I wanted to make was what we call revenge behavior, which we saw when Wuhan finished its quarantine and people were able to go out. Luxury spending went through the roof. It was like people had this pent-up demand to spend money on really expensive, senseless things, sort of like a revenge, getting back at the virus and saying, you know, I spend more, therefore I am. Now, not everybody's going to buy luxury items, but the idea of sort of these pent-up desires, I think to a certain extent will happen socially as well, although I think it will take another form. I think people will still be very cautious. And we see already, you know, when the virus was starting to threaten the states, we heard anecdotally private clubs were doing very well. So where people might have been a little bit more nervous to be, say, at a rock concert, Soho House was popping and Polo Lounge in Beverly Hills was packed. So this idea perhaps that people are okay gathering in smaller, clubbier venues where they are in the same social circles, or they sort of have this sense of control. And I say sense because it's not really control, but this sense of safety among people they know. And, you know, that's something that we can see, but definitely the desire to be and connected in real life is going to come out in some very fierce form once we're allowed to socialize again. You know. Yeah.
It's interesting because I was actually thinking also about, hold on, just about the, you know, all the pictures out of Daytona Beach yesterday and all the people that were like, I'm still on spring break and how.
Yeah, those kids are all coming back sick. I'm convinced.
Oh, my God. And then also the other part of it. I mean, the other piece of it I think is interesting is the fact that, you know, people at Soho House or Polo Lounge or wherever, and I think those places are closed now, but that I think that there is an innate, like, elitism, meaning other people will get it, but if I go to the Soho House, then I am protected from it, even though that doesn't really make rational sense. But I think that goes on with the way people think.
Yeah, and I also think we're getting to a place, at least right now, it may change, but right now where people are very binary, you know, you either have the virus or you don't, and there's no tolerance for any in-betweens. And so I think that will probably, you know, legacy and manifest itself in some way towards social behaviors as well.
Okay, so I did a little story today because a staffer on the Dr. Oz show was tested positive for coronavirus, and they were saying that this person really only had a little cough. But because Dr. Oz has been reporting on this virus so much, he was like, no, this person needs to get tested. The person did, and they had it. But they were like, had we not tested this person, no one would have known because the symptoms were so small. So I think that people have no idea.
About spring break. Well, that's my gosh, spring break. Yeah.
And should
now
be.
Now they're finding that the immunity of youth isn't necessarily as young as they thought it was.
Oh, no. There was a story today that like 50, I don't forget the percentage, but a large percentage in New York was like between 20 and 50.
20. Yeah. Yeah. I know. So we'll see as they test more.
Okay. Your last one, if you remember, was?
Work from home wear.
Yeah, I love this one. So tell me about this.
So you've already probably seen it if you've been on a video conference, but what people choose to wear to show up in a work call is different than what it used to be. You know, I talked about the aesthetics already, but certainly, you know, more minimal makeup, more relaxed clothing may require or create an opportunity for companies to develop clothing that does look a little more professional, but has the relaxed fit and comfort of t-shirt or a hoodie. I'm starting to get emails from fashion brands saying, you know, we have work from home wear. So we're already seeing a move towards that. Also, interestingly, the backgrounds on the video conferences are doing two things. One is that you're seeing people playing around with virtual backgrounds, which is pretty interesting and kind of trippy. And then the second thing is just looking into people's houses is fascinating. I think half the calls I'm on, everyone's just commenting on what's in the background and where people are. And I think this kind of voyeuristic peek into your coworkers' living spaces, you know, again, sort of with the idea of the new homesteading and curiosity about living spaces and design and interior decoration, all these things are now becoming more important than they ever had, as well as, I like to say, you know, invest in good lighting, because no one will know if you didn't take a shower, but they'll know if you have bad lighting. You know, these are all, again, just kind of changing the norms and people trying to figure out what will be socially acceptable on a video conference. What is socially acceptable for working from home? And, you know, how do you maintain a level of professionality when you're in your least professional environment? You'll see more solutions even than, and like, because no one ever liked video conferences and now we all have to embrace them, right?
Right. So that's what I was going to say is I'm going to have to invest in my home studio lighting because I feel like my avoidance of video conferencing is probably going to have to come to an end pretty soon. Well,
think about how, you know, there's entire cottage industries set up for helping influencers set up their, figure out what their setup is for production, right?
Yeah,
and there's perhaps that will overlap into the home professional. But I think that, you know, we're probably going to see different kinds of products and remedies and services that are really geared toward creating not just a home office, but a home studio. because that's essentially what we're talking about.
Well, I also think if it's somebody like you who's working with lots of different companies, you know, and it's a lot about your presentation look and feel, that makes a lot of sense to me. That would be something that you would need even. And the other piece of it is we're all content producers these days. So let's pretend me and you were doing this conversation, but we were doing on a video podcast, which is not crazy. In that case, right. Having a home studio makes complete sense. You know, a home video studio that works. So, yeah.
That's going to be the next investment.
Okay, I'm going to put mine in my spa bathroom. So get ready for that.
Next screening room.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Linda. I wanted to keep this one quick, but we will check back in soon. Hopefully this will be, you know, maybe when this wraps up a little, we'll check back in and see where we're at.
That sounds great. I think, you know, it's a really difficult time, but uncertainty breeds creativity. And we really are looking for people to take advantage of the opportunities in positive ways. It's a really great time for innovation. And, you know, innovation is often the product of frustration. So if you find a pain point in the next couple of months, maybe there's a solution that will come from it. That's a super great idea.
I think also that's an awesome place to end, which is just that this, even though this is a tough time and there's uncertainty and the market is crazy, this is also a time for innovation and opportunity. It's like a nice spot to end on. There is a light at the end of this tunnel.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Thank you.
Stay safe. Wash your hands.
You too. Stay we'll healthy. Talk soon.
Stay safe. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Paige Albiniak is editorial director at Promax. Andres Trujillo, Promax's social media and community manager, edited this podcast. Video Helper provides the music. Digital content producer Kayla Marie Hardaway contributes to Daily Brief. Promax is rebranded to just Promax, so you can find us on Promax Global on Facebook and Promax_Global on Twitter and Instagram. You can also always reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.